He's got a beautiful backswing.
Oh, he got all of that one.
Oh my gosh.
That is amazing.
Layup with an iron into the hazard.
Oh my God, you had to deal with the golf course people too!
Well, that wasn't quite what I meant, you know?
What is good, everybody? Welcome into the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphreys, Taylor Williams, and yes, Jim Woodward is back from vacation this week. Woody spent last week in Vegas. Obviously, we had a crazy week radio schedule during Masters week, so we haven't talked to Woody in a couple weeks. Woody, I'll get your thoughts on Scottie Scheffler at the RBC, but I wanted to give you an opportunity to just tell us what you thought about Scottie Scheffler 2 weeks ago at the Masters.
Well, you know, that's what's crazy. It seems it's hard to believe that that was that long ago. I will tell you guys this. I've been thinking about this, and I've given it a little thought, which is unlikely of me, giving anything any thought. I watched almost every hole of that Masters that week, and you guys grew up with Tiger. I've been lucky enough that I'm old enough I got to see Tiger and Jack. I'm going to tell you what. Watching Scheffler, he reminds me, you ready for this? He reminds me of Jack Nicklaus. And wow. The reason why I'm going to say this, guys, you all didn't get to see Nicklaus in his prime when he was really doing what he could do. Tiger was so good and so intimidating, you can't even put him on a level, okay? Jack and Scotty remind me so much of each other. And the reason why I'm going to say this, just watching this Masters, Jack was like a buzzard on a tree. He would wait patiently for you to screw up. Then he would just swoop in and just get the trophy. Tiger would go out and beat your brains out. And if he didn't, he'd intimidate you into you choking so bad. What you saw at that Masters, and I watched it very closely, Morikawa made a double. Hobert made a double. Homa made a double. Scotty made one little bogey on 11. But other than that, he let everybody else fall in the river and drown, and he waltzed right in and got it. You guys didn't get to see Jack the way I did. I'm telling you, boys, this is a spitting image. You hear all everybody say that Jack was the best, Tiger was the best. They were both different, but they were both outstanding. This guy right now is approaching the third best I've ever watched play golf. And that's saying a lot because I'm an old man. But I watch that, guys, and you can't relate to what I am now. Some of our listeners can. You young guys can't. But I ask your daddy if I'm right, Sam, because I think he will tell you the same thing. He sees a lot in Scottie Scheffler that Jack Nicklaus did. Patient, just waits around, and boom. So that's my two cents on Augusta, but I'll tell you what, that was fun to watch.
It really was, Woody, and it's a perfect lead-in to our RBC recap. T-Dub, welcome into the show. We got to talk about Scottie Scheffler winning again at the RBC, eases into the week with a little 70 on the first day, and then just proceeds to absolutely dominate, gain over three shots, tee to green. The guy's the best iron player in the world. He's the best driver of the golf ball in the world. He's the best around the greens, and he putted average, and guess what? He won. If he putts average, Scottie Scheffler is going to win the golf tournament. This is the most dominant golf we have seen since prime Tiger Woods, T-Dub. The guy has figured out how to at least putt average, and I don't think he's beatable right now. He's really not beatable. By the way, wins the golf tournament at the RBC by 3 shots over Sahith Theegala. Scheffler at 19-under, Theegala at 16-under, wins it on Monday after the rain delay. T-Dub, what were your thoughts on what you saw from Scottie Scheffler?
Well, just to allude the point of what Woody was bringing up about how dominant of a stretch of golf this has been and how good Scottie Scheffler has played over this last, really, since he won back in 2022, even before the Masters, when he kind of started this miraculous run. But you look at how he played this entire week, guys, and this will just kind of show how flawless his game is. He bogeyed his last hole on 18, but he was up by four shots. So I'm not going to necessarily count that because he was coasting in. Before that, the only score that he had over par for the entire week was in the first round on the third hole where he made a double bogey. Other than that, he did not make a bogey all tournament. He had birdies, and he had an eagle in there, and then he had a bunch of pars. So it just shows how sound of game that he has to be able to play that many holes on a, like, Harbortown's not the hardest golf course you ever play, but it's definitely tricky. Any Pete Dye golf course you play, you could easily make a double and around any corner. It could happen, and he goes through the entire tournament with hardly any of them. And to your point you were making earlier, Sam, he is analytically over the last 2 years, he's the best driver of the ball by a long ways. He's actually the best driver of the ball by essentially 0.2 shots. There's only two players currently averaging more than a shot gained off the tee. It's Scottie Scheffler and Luvid Obert. With the irons, he's almost a shot better than anyone else. Xander Schauffele is number two. Scottie Scheffler is number one. Around the greens, he's number one. Number two is Justin Thomas and Mackenzie Hughes are tied there. And compared to last year when he was down in the 200s in putting, he is now up to 66th in putting. So he's drastically turned that around. His last five events, he's won four of them, finished second at the Houston Open. Had he not missed a five-footer on 18, he could have went into a playoff and potentially won that tournament. And then I've been talking about this the last couple of weeks, but I'll break it down even more because it keeps increasing the amount of value. Since the analytical era started back in the mid-1990s, Scottie Scheffler is playing the second best golf we've ever seen, only the Tiger Woods. Tiger in his prime in 2000 was gaining basically 3.9 shots on the field per round, almost four shots a round. Scottie Scheffler is the only other player to gain more than three shots per round on the field. The third best, who was second best before Scottie Scheffler came along, was Vijay back in 2004 when he had his miraculous run when he won eight or nine times that year and dethroned Tiger actually for world number one in the world at the time. So just to put this into comparison, John Rahm, last year during his big run in 2020, at the start of 2023, he was gaining about 2.7 shots on the field. So Scottie Scheffler is gaining 0.3 shots, which that may not sound like a lot, but at this high of level, that is a drastic amount of difference between the great golf that John Rahm played at the start of last year compared to what Scottie Scheffler is playing now. Then you even break it down, like Jordan Spieth in 2015, Jason Day in 2015, gaining almost half a shot better than they were playing then. The same with Rory at his best, the same with Dustin Johnson, Phil Mickelson at their best, Victor Hovland, Xander Schauffele, all these great players who have played great golf in the last 10 to 15 years. He's not just beating the best golf that they played, he's blowing it out of the water.
And like I said when I started our podcast, guys, he is right now the third best I have ever watched. And here's the thing. I listened to your podcast last week, guys, while I was in Vegas. I couldn't agree with you more. I thought they'd all come in flat. I thought for sure Scottie Scheffler was going home to have a baby. I couldn't believe he was playing in the tournament. But then all of a sudden, here he comes. And I'm just saying, I don't know. He's by far, I mean, I know you guys like Rory, especially you, T-Dub. This guy's so much better than Rory McIlroy, it's not even close. He might as well be comparing him to Rory McIlroy from Tin Cup, okay? Because it's not even close. This boy is at a level of golf right now that is nothing like we have ever seen since Tiger Woods. And I don't know if it's good or bad, because I would think this would drive ratings up, but we're not seeing it. The Masters was not high as far as viewers go. And I think it goes back to what we've all talked about. We got too much discontent in the world of golf, but this is somebody that's really special that we don't realize how special he is. We need to start paying attention. This is a guy that's just off the charts good. I hope he rolls through these majors with this same hot streak so we can talk a little bit about how many can he win.
And I just don't see the drop-off coming. Obviously, Rory got off to a really hot start. So let's compare Rory and Scheffler for a second through 120 events. Rory had four majors to Scheffler's two. Rory had 13 wins to Scheffler's 9 wins, 10 around the world, if you want to count that. Top 10s, Rory had 57 through 120 events. Scheffler has 52. Top 25s, they both had 79. and Scheffler has more missed cuts. But, fellas, that's including Scheffler being 253rd last year on the greens. He's figured out the putting, and he's just so much more dominant ball-striking-wise than Rory ever was. We're about to see the most dominant stretch of golf we've ever seen since Tiger Woods. It's already started, but I don't see a drop-off coming. I mean, heck, the guy is 40-1 to win the Grand Slam, something that no one has ever done. That's extremely short odds for something that no one has ever done. Scheffler is amazing. But I will say this, he still has to get to Jordan Spieth with three majors. He still has to get to Rory with four. He still has to get to Koepka with five. But he's going to. He's going to. And as far as the statistics and the analytics and the strokes gained, he is by far the best golfer we've seen since Tiger Woods. And now that he has the putting figured out, at least a little bit, the guy's going to win huge. He's going to win and not stop winning, fellas. No one can hit the ball as well as Scottie Scheffler is right now. And you look at the stats too. I mean, among the top 150 golfers on Datagolf, Scheffler is 69th in putting since January 1st, gaining not even a shot per tournament with his putter. That's barely above average. And he's won four times and has seven top five finishes. This guy is so much better ball striking wise than anyone we have seen since Prime Tiger. The guy is not going to lose golf tournaments moving forward. I'm going to say something outlandish, but I think he wins two more majors this year. I know the guy's never won after the month of April on the PGA Tour or majors, but he's going to this year. No one's even close to the guy.
Just to kind of wrap your head around this, the difference between Scottie Scheffler's approach iron strokes gain percentage versus Xander Schauffele, who is in second, is the same difference between Schauffele, who is in second, versus someone who is down in the 125 range. So he is comparatively that much better than number two, because Xander Schauffele is essentially a middle-of-the-pack iron player. That is, it's double the player, double the great iron player. It's unbelievable how consistent he has been. And it's at all levels, too. It's the shorter shots, it's the medium shots, and it's the longer shots. You'll see from time to time where you'll have great ball strikers, but they'll struggle with their wedge game, or they'll struggle with, you know, the mid-irons may not be exactly right. Or they'll be really great iron players, and they'll struggle with their driver like a Henrik Stenson did. But he does every single thing right. And since he's gone to this mallet putter, the Spider, he's all of a sudden not an atrociously bad putter. He's an above-average true putter. And whenever you are that dominant of a ball striker, whenever you are never putting the ball out of position off the tee, and you're putting it exactly pin high, distance control is utmost important. It's one thing Tiger preached about monumentally, and Scottie Scheffler's the best currently at distance control, and it's not even close to that measure. And then you look at it in the, what is it, he's played nine tournaments so far this year, and only one of them he's lost strokes gained around the green. So the short game is absolutely there. Anytime he does get out of position, he's going to chip it to within 3 or 4 feet, and last year he would miss a lot of those putts, but this year, or since he at least switched to that Spider putter, he is not doing that. So, yes, I think this guy is the limit. I don't think Sam is preposterous at all thinking that he could win two more major championships, because it doesn't matter if you include every golfer in the world right now, PGA Tour and LIV. Scottie Scheffler is so much better than everyone else. I was talking about last show, Woody, how the PGA Tour really needs a Rory McIlroy, a Ludwig Aubert to be able to challenge Scottie Scheffler, because if he keeps running away with tournaments, it's not going to be the best for viewership, because Scheffler is not the type of polarizing figure to capture eyeballs to make you want to go out of your way. But he's so dominant in that aspect that if we don't appreciate the legendary run that he's on right now, it could blow us by. But he did improve from last year to this year, which we thought was possible with the putter, but we didn't think it was possible with the irons to get better than he does. We actually consider if it keeps on improving, then who knows what the game of golf will look like then.
I wanted to mention this. I compared Scheffler to Rory. I forgot to compare Scheffler to Tiger, and Tiger in 2000 and 2001, which a lot of people consider the greatest golf ever played. Tiger finished top 10 66.7% of the time from 2000 to 2001. Scottie Scheffler from 2022 to 2024, this point in 2024, has finished top 10 72% of the time. Now, Tiger won a whole lot more because he was also the best putter in the world. But Scottie Scheffler, if he continues to putt average, Number one, he's up there in contention even more than Tiger was. It's insane, the stats. I can't believe I'm saying this. I never thought I'd see something like Tiger again, but this is as close as we're going to get, I promise.
Oh, I can't agree with you more. I think he hit so many greens, it's hard for him to putt it, you know, a lot better. If he putts a lot better, as many greens as he hit. You know what's funny, though, when you, from the being a teacher and listening to great teachers and studying golf swings as long as I have, what's funny about all these guys that we've been talking about, do you think Randy Smith and Scottie Scheffler are going to change his footwork or his golf swing?
Hell no.
Jordan Spieth, Rory McIlroy, all these other, even Tiger was guilty of it, guys. He changed his swing about three different times. Jack Nicklaus, again, this is why I'm comparing these two to you. Jack Nicklaus never changed his golf swing. It never changed. He had one instructor his whole life. It was Jack Grout. That's it. He played with what he had. And our listeners need to listen to this because they're the worst, our listeners. They want to change their golf swing every time they see a YouTube video or every time they see something on the golf channel, and they don't even practice, okay? And they're wanting to retool their golf swings all the time. If you get better, great, but most of the time you go backwards. I'll bet you Scottie Scheffler's golf swing doesn't change his whole career. You guys want to bet me on that?
No, I mean, I'm not betting you on that for sure. Now, anything else that you guys want to add on Scheffler before we get to the most dominant golfer in the world, fellas?
Yeah, well, we got another one we're going to talk about, I hope, because we got, for the first time in our careers, we got United States, both the men's and the women's dominate.
It's amazing, well, and this is something we've never seen, is two golfers dominating like this, as far as Scheffler winning 4 out of 5 tournaments, including a major, and Nelly Korda, who we're about to talk about, winning 5 straight, including a major. That has never happened in the history of golf, even during Tiger and Annika.
None. That's what I mean. This is, we are in such a rare place right now in golf, and I don't even think people realize how rare what we're seeing is. I think everybody's like, oh, yeah, they want to get it? Okay. Like it's something you go and put the trash out on Friday. No, this is not normal. You don't dominate this era of golfers as good as they all are like these two people are. I mean, this is nuts.
It really is. T-Dub, anything else on Scheffler before we get to Nelly Korda?
The last thing I'll say about Scheffler is we've talked a lot about in these last couple of years about money in the game of golf and how much these players are making. Scottie Scheffler, so far in 2024, it is currently April 23rd, so we are, what, less than 4 months into the year. He has made $18.69 million, which we thought that LIV was the place you make all the money, and obviously you're going to make a lot of money over there. But $18.69 million in 4 months of work is crazy. To compare that to other players, Wyndham Clark is second at $9.1 million. Tahiti Gala is in third at $6.5 million. Ludwig Aubert, not even a year turned pro yet. A year ago, last year, he was playing in the Big 12 golf tournament, and this year he has already made $6.5 million, so congratulations to him.
I mean, pretty fellas,
good,
last
pretty
year's
good deal, huh?
Yeah, pretty darn good deal. Thank you, Liv, for all the money on the PGA Tour. By the way, Tiger back in the day, if you compared the best golf that he played 2000 to 2001, or if you want to compare 05 to really 06, 07, Tiger would have made $92 million in today's day and age if they were getting paid that type of money. But in reality, wow. Scheffler in 2023 holds the record for most money ever made in a single season on the PGA Tour, made $21 million. And what do you say he's up to in the last, what, 40 days, T-Dub?
So for the year, he's up to $18.69 million. You include his last 5 tournaments, which have been, like I said, 4 firsts and 1 tied second in there. I think that accumulates to be like $16 million, which that's been over the course of, when was that first win that he had down in Bay Hill, which was March 10th. So we're not even 2 months of work in there, and he's accumulated $16 million. It's absolutely unheard of.
Which, by the way,
hey guys,
is only second to John Rahm. Last year made $16.5 million, and he won five times around the world and then won the Masters. I mean, this guy is
weird.
Here's
what I'm
going to
tell you guys. Here's the good news for me, because I bought Scotty a baby present. I'm going to take it back and get my money back. He don't need my birthday. Okay,
that's exactly right.
He doesn't need a baby
right.
present for me. Yeah, he's got enough money. He can afford a baby present. I don't need to get him one.
Well, Scotty Scheffler wins again. I mean, took what, a 24-hour trip back home to Dallas, showed off the green jacket and said, okay, I'm going to go ease my way into a week and go ahead and win again. Nelly Korda.
Real quick, Sam. I want to throw this out about Scheffler, which I think is interesting, scrolling through here.
Yeah.
So since every major that he's played in since the start of 2020, he's only missed the cut in one of them. And he's only lost strokes gained off the tee in one of them. It's very interesting that it was at Southern Hills at the 2002 PGA Championship, which he called notoriously his favorite course that he's ever played. So interesting, he's had this much success, a lot of success in majors, and of course that we all thought he'd thrive on right in our backyard, was the only time that he may ever miss a cut in a major.
That's unbelievable. It honestly is just truly unbelievable. Scotty Scheffler, a well-deserved week off this week at the Zurich Classic, not playing in that this year. Fellas, we got to get to Nelly Korda. Nelly Korda wins for the fifth straight time this week at a major championship, the Chevron Championship. Nelly Korda finishes at 13 under par, wins by two over former OSU Cowgirl golfer Maya Stark, finishes solo second at 11 under par, and then you had Laura Coughlin and Brooke Henderson at 10 under par, tied for third. Nelly Korda, five straight wins. I mentioned it in the Scotty Scheffler discussion, fellas. This is absolute dominance. Five straight wins, including a major. I don't really even need to expand on that. That's just purely historic, to be honest.
Well, it was a good comparison that was brought up earlier when you look around the early 2000s there. You had Tiger and Annika, who are clearly dominant on both tours. And now you have Scheffler and Nelly Korda, who are both clearly dominant on the tour. So you look at Nelly, how she started off the year. Her first tournament was at the Tournament of Champions. She finished 16th at that event, and she was actually at the time ranked 4th in the Rolex rankings. But since then, won at the Drive-On Championship, won at the Savory Pop Championship, won the Ford Championship, won the match play down at Shadow Creek, and then won this last week in a major championship to solidify her dominance. And just to kind of, once again, like we were doing with Scheffler, to wrap your mind around how big of a lead that she has. The Rolex rankings are the equivalent to what the OWGR used to be, I guess, for the men. So this one isn't as really just a piece of crap as the OWGR is. So this one's actually something you can rely on. Nelly Korda's average points is 12.42. Second best is Lilia Vu at 6.52. She's almost double the amount over one versus number two. So to put that also into perspective, the difference between number two going down to that is you're looking well outside the top 100. Maybe outside the top 200 or 300 in ranking. So that just shows, Woody, how much of a lead Nelly Korda has over every other women's player in the game right now. And we talk about this all the time, too. We talk about it. I don't know how you can get better fundamentals when you talk about the swing and really her putting, too. She has a really good putting stroke, too. So, yeah, just every time you watch her swing, you think, my God, if you could just emulate that to the best of your ability, you're never going to hit the ball offline.
TW are spot on, because that's what – the only reason why I watch women's golf is to watch her golf swing. I'm telling you, it is as pretty a golf swing as anybody will ever see. And the thing is with the girls, they're not going to have the swing speed of the men. Okay, so Scotty Scheffler's got to move his feet around to get the hell out of the way because he's going so fast. Okay, well, the girls don't have that kind of speed most of the time. I haven't seen any women that get up in the speeds of the men. Maybe a couple now and then, but not the leading guy. So when you watch her swing, that's what people should watch, because that's about the swing speeds we all make. And it's such a pretty golf swing. Well, I shouldn't say that. Sam, you're faster than that. You need to watch Scheffler. You need to figure out how to slide your foot and kick out and do all that crap, because you're going about as fast as he is. But most people don't. And so when you watch Nelly Korda, I guess more than anything, you can almost see when an athlete is so confident that they don't even look like they're trying and still just beating the dog out of everybody they play. And that's what Nelly Korda looks like to me. She looks so good over the ball, walking the fairways, interviews, everything. She's so confident. What it's really crazy is we forget the reason why she wasn't dominating before now, she had back surgery. She had real, she had maybe didn't have surgery, but she had some back issues, okay? So she had to work through those. And T-Dub said on more than one occasion, back issues are not something you want to play with. They can be, career ending is what they can be, for a better way of saying it. So when you think about where she was 2 years ago with back problems and where she is now, she's kind of like Scheffler, guys. I don't know when she's going to lose because she's playing again this week. And I just can't even fathom, how do you play 6 weeks in a row and maybe win 6 weeks in a row? That's just mind-boggling to me. I just can't even imagine. She's taking no time off. She's going another one this week. You guys realize that?
It's ridiculous. I don't know how, number one, you don't get tired, and number two, do you never get satisfied either? Like, is winning even fun to you? You know what I mean? That means she's taking no time to enjoy the victory like a normal person would. I mean, she's trying to break records right now, something that we rarely see, like with Tiger Woods or Scottie Scheffler this week at the RBC, but I don't want to minimize what Nelly Korda is doing just because we're seeing similar things in the men's game. This is very rare stuff that we're just ironically seeing at the same time.
Well, one thing that we're all starting up here, guys, is what the game giveth, the game will take away at some point. So both these players have been on immaculate runs. Are they going to be able to win every single tournament for the rest of their lives? No. The question is, what will the volatility be? Will Scheffler and Nelly, will they both continue to progress and get better and then be absolutely dominant, so then the worst finish they'll ever have is maybe fifth whenever they just play absolutely atrocious? Or are we going to have something to where maybe some other players in the men's or women's game come up and maybe challenge them and then they start to fall down a little bit, and maybe we're going to have a nice rivalry that comes out from all these dominant players? That's what I want to happen, because as great as it was to have Tiger be a dominant force in the game of golf, he was so polarizing that it doesn't, like, even now when he has no chance to win the tournament, people go out of their way to make sure they get to watch him play golf. Scottie Scheffler, when he's 60 years old trying to compete at the Masters, people aren't going to go out of their way to make sure that they watch him, at least at this point. So we need to be able to hopefully get some nice competition going. The last few years, it had been on the PGA Tour versus LIV side on the rivalries. But now I feel like that hopefully the game is coming back together here in a little bit. And so then from there, we need some rivalries on both these tours. As great as it is to have these dominant figures, we need someone to challenge them. Hopefully it's not because these players regress when they start to get some challengers. Hopefully it's some other people are able to ramp their game up. And hopefully these dominating fashion, as both these players have been, Woody, will motivate the other players to become better, not just check their bank accounts every other day.
Well, what Tiger do, guys? He pushed it to a level. Nobody worked out. Nobody did all these things that you see this generations of guys coming up and doing. Scotty and Nelly Korda are going to do the same thing. People are going to look around and they're going to go, wow. I will say this, though, guys. I mean, Scheffler especially, his life is going to change. When you bring another human being in that is yours and you're supposed to take care of it for the rest of your life, I don't care who you are, that changes you as a person. Your perspective, your priorities. Everything changes as people grow and familize and do all that. I don't even know if that's a word, but you know what I mean. I'm just saying Nelly Korda's going to do the same thing. She's going to have children. I'm going to bet she's going to have children. So as we look at this, as dominating as this is and impressive as it is, I don't think their golf will change. I think their lives will change, which in tune will change their golf in some ways. Both you guys are no children in your lives, okay? Ask your little buddy Colby. Now, life has changed since that little girl came into his life. And I don't care who you are, it's okay that golf, and Scheffler's already kind of there, guys. What does he say in every interview? Golf does not determine who I am. I'm not who I am because I play golf. When a guy's that grounded this early, that's scary for everybody else. So he's still going to have his moments. Jack Nicklaus had five children. His game kind of went up and down because he spent a lot of time with his family. It was very important for him to go to his kids' baseball games or his daughter's volleyball matches. Well, that's part of this evolution that you go through as a professional athlete. I guess you can be just selfish your whole life. Boy, but I feel sorry for guys that do that. I think we will see some kind of downturn as these guys change, their life change. But Tiger, even when he had all the hiccups he had, he was still a great player. Jack, even though he had some slumps, he never changed. I don't think you're going to see that with Scotty, and I don't think you're going to see that with Nelly Korda. They might have some hiccups, but boy, those guys, they're just too good, guys. This is history in the making. We better sit back and appreciate it.
And that kind of leads me to my next question. You brought this up earlier. I think it was Woody that brought up the fact that the Masters TV ratings were down. Do you guys think it's a good thing to have a dominant golfer, whether it be in men's or women's golf? Do you think that's a good thing for the sport? Because golf was extremely popular with Tiger, obviously, but Taylor brings up a good point that he was super polarizing and something that people had never seen before. And Scotty is dominant, but not quite as dominant as Tiger Woods yet. I don't think he ever will be, but I have to say yet based on what he's doing right now. But then golf continued to grow in popularity because I feel like there were a bunch of people to root for, a bunch of players to root for, and people stayed engaged. Do you think that one person like Scottie Scheffler being just extremely dominant is good for the game of golf?
I think it definitely has its benefits for sure. One thing I mentioned there, the one of the last things I said, is it should motivate these other players to want to get better. No one likes losing. Like, even if you go out there and see if the guy finished second this week, makes a lot of money, and he's a young, upcoming player, but at the same time, he should be a little frustrated that he didn't win the tournament. I mentioned earlier about the bogey thing, and Sigala had like four or five bogeys over the course of the tournament compared to Scheffler's I alluded to earlier. That should piss you off. That should make you want to become better. But then you also look at the perspective of who are the polarizing names in the game of golf. I mean, to me, Rory's a lot more polarizing than Scheffler. Isn't Scheffler's so much better, as Woody said earlier, such a better player than Rory is right now. It's not even funny. He's more polarizing than or Scheffler. When you look at the players out there who would captivate audiences.
I mean, Kepka's definitely above Scheffler as far as polarizing figures, right? And maybe that has to do with the fact that he's won three more majors than Scheffler has right now. Andy's on LIV. You might put the LIV guys as far as polarizing guys just because they went to LIV, like Rahm.
No, but then you have... Hey, T-Dub, I don't mean to interrupt. You know what you guys are missing here? And you're missing it because you're really not looking at the big picture. As great and polarizing as Tiger was, I knew a lot of people couldn't stand him. Hope he shot a million. Hope he failed. Okay? Kepka's the same way. Okay? Do you know anybody, have you ever talked to anybody yet that says, I don't like that Scotty Scheffler?
Not one person, ever. No.
Not one person. See, that's what we're missing here, guys. And I mean, I hate this. This is the worst thing in the world to sit here and talk about. But the reason why Scheffler is not so much moving the needle is you really don't dislike the guy. And you guys know I'm right. You know there were people that could not stand Tiger Woods.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Absolutely despising because he was so good. He was so arrogant, especially guys my age. Let me tell you something. I had a bunch of my buddies couldn't stand the guy. Kepka's the same way. Bryson DeChambeau, same way. Phil Mickelson now, same way. Go through the list. Patrick Reed, they all hate him. Maybe somebody loves him. So, you know what I mean? But that's what we're not seeing in that, and nor do I want that, okay? So what you said, well, I don't mean to interrupt you guys, but when I'm listening to you, that's what I'm seeing is, yes, is Scottie Scheffler the future of golf in a dominant way. Yeah, he is. He can flat play. But still he does something that people get mad at him about or something goes crazy, which I don't think is going to happen. He's not the best for the game. Does that make sense?
No, it makes sense. And you're making a bunch of great points there, Woody. The fact that if Scheffler keeps dominating, first of all, no one dislikes him right now, and so no one's rooting against him. And number two, one thing that made golf extremely popular, in my opinion, over the last couple years at least, is people have players to root for and players to root against. And what you're saying is a bunch of people were rooting against Tiger Woods, and obviously a bunch of people were rooting for Tiger Woods. But right now, all of the players that people became fans of, especially casual fans during COVID when golf gained popularity over the past couple of years and probably started watching golf again for the first time since Tiger, all of those players that people started rooting for, they're fighting for second place right now. That's what they're doing.
And they will be. And do you know how many people, when Tiger Woods was dominated, how many people got behind golf that were never behind golf?
Yeah, it was just a perfect storm for Tiger, all those things considered. He revolutionized the racial car. He revolutionized fitness in the game of golf. He revolutionized golf technology. He was the first person to use a solid core ball like he did in the 2000 U.S. Open, which was a clear advantage when it came to equipment. So literally everything he did was groundbreaking, revolutionary, which was something that Scottie Scheffler just does not have right now, which is why I think that he needs at least a running mate to try to put some heat on him. So you look at other guys in the game who I think could polarize. I mean, if Rory gets his shit figured out, a Scheffler Rory head to head at major championships would be awesome to watch. But then you look down, like maybe Hideki Matsuyama would be up there because he'd obviously have the Japan crowd. And then I absolutely love Hideki, so that would be someone in there. Justin Thomas, Jordan Spieth, those are kind of the guys you look at who, from a fan's perspective, would grip onto. But then you have kind of that tier below, and I'm just talking PGA Tour guys right now. If we have a Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, kind of duel for these next couple years, as golf fans, I think we'll love that. I'm not sure that's going to be something that's going to draw the everyday fan into it. What could help is if you do have a situation like that, you have a Scheffler, Morikawa, and then maybe Cantlay or Obeyer, maybe some of them get it figured out. But then you have another three-horse race, like we could have a Jack Arnie, Gary Player type situation, which would be really cool. So I think that the game of golf, it's good to have someone out there to kick everyone's ass for this stretch of golf, which he has been, or Scheffler has been over these last couple of years. But someone's going to need to challenge him pretty quick, because if he just keeps dominating like he has, it's going to be something that's absolutely historic, but it's going to be something that gets people not necessarily as drawn into the game, because for whatever reason, a lot of people were talking about this leading up to the Masters. It's really weird that we have so many great players struggling with their games at this time of year for whatever reasons. Could be dealing with money, could be all the off-the-course things, whatever you want to do, but it's just funny that Scottie Scheffler accelerated his game so much, and it seems like most of the other big name players, with the exception of an Obeyer who's just coming out on the scene, have really declined in the last year or two.
Sam, when you have to agree with me, the problem is they're searching for something that nothing was wrong. What was wrong with Jordan Spieth's golf swing, winning three majors and dominating when he was younger? What was really wrong with that? Okay,
I mean, same thing we talked about with Hovland. Yeah, you're exactly right.
Maybe his left elbow bent a little. He chicken-winged a little bit. Excuse me, he won three major championships, okay? What is wrong with that? And see, that's what I think we're going to see, is these guys got to quit searching and start figuring out, hey, Scottie Scheffler's running over you like a Mack truck, and you're going to have to either figure this out and quit tinkering and go to find something you can play with, or this guy's just going to keep beating your all's bottoms. And I think at some point guys are going to get tired of him winning. And I think even the casual golf fan is going to go, can anybody beat this guy? So they're going to start pulling against him. That's human nature. I'm not. I love the dude. I think he's so good for the game. It's a joke. But I think they'll pull for especially Obeyer, because Obeyer is one of those guys that's just such a cool-looking dude. He's got the prettiest golf swing out there, and he just kind of la-di-da goes about his business. And so I think he will start getting in there. Rory's the perfect candidate, but I don't know when Rory's going to get his all his stuff together. So Spieth, who knows where he's going now? So, you know, all these guys that we wanted to pull for, Justin Thomas, all these dudes, they're just not performing. We need a new villain to come on board.
You do. And here's the thing historically, and I agree with your point wholeheartedly, Woody, on the fact that people will eventually start rooting against Scottie Scheffler just because they get tired of him winning. I mean, we see that in every sport, any dynasty with the, you know, Warriors or the, you know, Patriots back in the day, any sport that a team or a player starts dominating, they'll eventually become a villain. But historically, everyone knows Jack 118 and Tiger 115. After that, you got Hagen at 11, and then you have Ben Hogan and Gary Player at 9. You have Tom Watson in 6th all-time at 8 major championships. Scottie Scheffler, he's 27 years old, so give him until 47. I mean, that's 80 more major championships. And I know he's not going to play at this level for his entire career, all 80 of those events. But what I'm saying is it would be shocking to me if he doesn't win 6 more major championships, just given the level that he's playing at right now. And I know he still, like I said earlier, has to pass Spieth, has to pass Rory, has to pass Brooks, but Scheffler's winning more than Brooks. I mean, Scheffler already has more wins than Brooks has in his career, which is crazy on the PGA Tour or worldwide, even if you include Brooks's win on LIV. So my point is 80 more major championships, and he only needs 6 more majors to catch up to Tom Watson. We're talking about all-time greats. That's why I don't think that Woody's comparison of Scheffler to like a young Jack Nicklaus, I don't think that's crazy, T-Dub. I mean, 80 more, and you're telling me Scheffler's only got to win 6 to get up to Tom Watson territory at 8 major championships.
Oh, it's not out of the realm of possibility whatsoever. I was alluding to how well he's played in the Masters or in the majors he's played in, with the exception of the 2016 and 19 U.S. Opens when he was, well, 2016 he was an amateur. 19 he was just barely a pro. And 2022 at the Southern Hills, whatever the hell happened there. Besides that, his worst finish in a major is 27th place, and he's played in like 18 majors. And you look at the two Masters wins that he has. Besides that, he finished 2nd last year to Brooks at Oak Hill. He finished 2nd to Matty Fitz at the Country Club in 2022 U.S. Open. He finished 3rd last year to Wyndham Clark at LACC. Then he has a 4th in there at the 2020 PGA Championship. He has another 7th, 8th, 8th, and 10th in there. So he has numerous top 10 finishes already in majors, not including the 2 green jackets he already has. So the haters will say, well, he's only won majors at the Masters, so you got to wonder how he'll do in the other ones to see, because people are talking about maybe getting the career grand slam, which how well he's playing is not out of the realm of possibility either, which would be absolutely unheard of if he's able to do it in a full calendar year. I just think that the golf gods will not allow that to happen, I don't think, but I could be wrong because the run that he's on is historic. So yes, no, this is not a couple of weeks ago is not the last time Scottie Scheffler is going to win a major championship. But to Woody's point, you have a baby, your life is going to change entirely. Then you have to consider also the fact of, as we get older, Father Time remains undefeated, and he could have some injuries that occur to his body. Then when you have that much footwork going on, if you have some ligament that's out of whack, that could really mess your spring up. So it's going to be interesting to see if he's able to stay healthy over the course of the duration of his career, because if he is able to do that, the sky is literally the limit, and it wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for him to get to double-digit make.
Yeah, I mean, there was a point, Woody, where if I would have told you that Tiger didn't catch up to Jack, you would have told me I was on crack. Or if I told you that Rory wasn't going to win, you know, another major for the next decade, if I told you that a decade ago today, you would have told me I was on crack, right? So we never know what's going to happen. But my point is, if you bring up Rory or Brooks or Spieth or any of those runs you want to bring up other than Tiger Woods, this is the best golf we've seen out of any of those guys, statistically.
By far. And you hit the nail on the head right there. I mean, I would have bet you $1 million. I'm not kidding you. I would have made the Jim Traber bet. There's no way on this earth or planet that Tiger wasn't going to go past Jack. I would have bet that all day long that Tiger was going to pass Jack, because he was just so dominating. He was so good. But we didn't know what was going to happen, did we, guys? And we don't know with Scotty. I'm with you, T-Dub. I'd like to see Scotty win either a PGA, a U.S. Open, or a British Open. I would like to see him win something besides the Masters. Not that he hadn't been close, not that he can't, but I'd like to see him go ahead and put one of those trophies in his case. And if that does happen, then I think we're going to have something pretty much interesting to watch. Yeah.
No doubt about it. Fellas, we need to hit our first break here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. If you're not already following us on social media, at the 73rd Hole on Twitter or X, and at 73rd Hole on Instagram, you can also catch not only our podcast, but our radio shows as well at the Sports Animal app. We'll be back right after this break, and we're going to talk some college golf. We'll also preview the Zurich Classic as well as Live Adelaide, where Taylor Gooch is the defending champion here on Oklahoma's leader in golf, the 73rd hole. We would like to welcome in a new sponsor to the 73rd hole podcast, Jimmy Austin Golf Club in Norman, Oklahoma. If you have any Sooner apparel needs or apparel needs in general, this is the golf shop to go to. Jimmy Austin Golf Shop has been rated as the top merchandising facility in all of the South Central section 5 out of the last 7 years. In addition to their phenomenal pro shop, Jimmy Austin is also going to be hosting a Korn Ferry event again this year, the Compliance Solutions Championship. On June 20th through the 23rd, you can come out to Jimmy Austin and see the stars of the future on the PGA Tour competing in the Compliance Solutions Championship on the Korn Ferry Tour. I also want to encourage all of our listeners out there to go out to Jimmy Austin and play some golf. It's one of, if not the best, public facility in Oklahoma, and it always ranks in the top 5 best courses in Oklahoma to play golf. So if you want to play like a champion, next time you're booking your tee time, remember, there's only one Jimmy Austin Golf Club. And we are back here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Sam Humphreys, Taylor Williams, and Jim Woodward with you today. Today is right in the middle of OU's last Big 12 championships down at Whispering Pines in Trinity, Texas. I can update you guys that through 54 holes of the 72-hole Big 12 championships, Texas is in the lead by 11 shots at 13 under par. They shot 13 under as a team today to take that lead. OU is in second place at 2 under par for the golf tournament. OSU is in third place at 1 under par for the golf tournament. Before we get to the actual leaderboard and breaking down OU and OSU, Woody, I know that you played Whispering Pines not too long ago. What are these guys facing this week down at the Big 12s?
First off, I mean, 13 under is really good. I mean, really good as a team. The golf course is one of these really types of golf course, Sam, that you got to do everything well. You've got to drive it well. You've got to put your irons in the right place on the greens, because the greens are so undulating and so severe, a little bit like Augusta, believe it or not. It's a golf course that just absolutely makes you be so patient. There's times you can get aggressive, but most of the time you got to always kind of play kind of safety zone. So Texas shooting that low, I'm pretty impressed. I didn't know Texas was that loaded, that they had that kind of team that could shoot that low. I mean, I'm not going to tell you that Coach Hibble's not unhappy. He's probably not. They probably given away some shots at 2 under, but that's pretty good around that golf course. So I will tell you this, though, guys, going into the final round of a golf tournament, this is the kind of golf course. If you get a little bit of trouble breathing, as we like to say, or when I get crude, I say get a little shit in your neck, and you can't quite get a breath, this golf course can jump up, and you can all of a sudden, what do they got, 9-shot lead, Sam?
11 shot lead.
I know that sounds like a big amount, but it can go quick at this Whispering Pines. You get a couple of guys going a little bit south, making some doubles on every hole out there you make double on so quickly. I don't know. I'm not giving up on the Sooners. That's all I'm saying, okay?
Hey, the Sooners or your Cowboys. I mean, Woody, after yesterday's round, BYU was in the lead at 1 under par for the golf tournament. Texas was at even par. Like I said, they shot 13 under today. OSU was 3 over par. In solo third place. OU was all the way down, tied for fifth place at 6 over par. So you can make some moves on this golf course, as we saw Texas do today. I mean, that leaderboard right there from yesterday compared to today proves Woody's point, right, T-Dub?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, when you're done with taking four scores and then a very volatile golf course like Whispering Pines, you're going to see some hecticness that happens tomorrow. I did not expect this to be a comfortable win for Texas. Maybe it will be, but I think that OU and OSU will definitely make a little bit of charge against them. And you look at really the difference has been for the two schools is OU currently has 3 players inside of the top 15. Our man Ryder Cowan's in 8th place currently. Jay Summey's in 11th. Andrew Goodman is in 15th. But then for OSU, Preston Stout is in 2nd place overall for the tournament, but he's kind of carrying the team. He shot 74, 69, 67. The second best score for OSU is Rahon Thomas and Jonas Baumgartner, who are both down there at 30th place. So seems like OU, at least from top to bottom, is got a little bit more of that middle depth going on. It's playing a little bit better, so that's something to look at. OU, Ben Lorenz is actually their worst player down in 55th place. So you look for – that's kind of a catalyst for your team that you want to play well. He's been a veteran there and has a lot of NCAA tournament experience, so you definitely want him to get his game going on. And as for – OSU, you have Rahon Thomas, Jonas Baumgartner, who are both veterans as well. They're just kind of mediocre weeks. But then you have Bo Jin, who's playing 5-bag for them this week. He's down in 47th place. That's someone who feels like he's been in college for 20 years now is what it seems like. And unfortunately, he's not playing his best golf right now. So if things stay all considered, though, there's still time between now and regionals. They're going to play one more round tomorrow at Big 12s, and they won't play any tournaments before regionals, but there's still time to get things figured out if you need to. So my outlook right now is both teams should be able to, unless they just play absolutely horrible, they're going to need to have 3 to 4 players just absolutely shit the bed at regionals for both teams to not make it to nationals. And then they keep it up. They just need to prove their form just a little bit more. And in my opinion, they could both be match play teams.
Hey, Woody, for the people that are maybe listening to this podcast tonight who are OU or OSU or even Texas fans, take us through like the last 3 holes, because following a golf tournament on Golfstat, you always kind of wonder what those holes look like if you've never been to the golf course. What are those players going to be facing as they try to close out the Big 12s tomorrow?
There are 3 completely different holes, Sam, and that's the reason why when we were talking about when I said OU and not OSU that I think OU could do it. OSU's close to being good again, but they just don't have that depth. But 16 is going to be a pretty difficult par 3. They're probably going to play it at about 210 over water to an extremely undulating green. And so it's not a hole you can make a big number on, but you can make bogey pretty quick. 17 is a very, very long par 5 that driving it in the right place is important for your second shot. Now, some of these guys might have the length to try it in 2, but a green that's really well protected, bunkers and the Lake Livingston is over on the left. And so a very difficult hole also, but 18, guys, is where everything can change so fast. One of the hardest closing holes I've ever played has to drive the ball perfectly to even have any chance to go at the green. And then when you're going at that green, it has a false front on it that if any ball's short a little right, are going to feed down into this water. And so if you protect it and hit it a little long and left, now you're chipping back down a really fast green that then it can get to the front and go down in the water. Literally, I'll tell you guys, I don't mind admitting this. I was playing in that golf tournament where I play every year down there. It's a partnership tournament. My partner
and I'll even tell you his name because he would laugh, but it still is Greg Lynn, who was the ladies' coach at Oklahoma Christian University. Okay. So we're playing as partners, he and I. I hit my tee shot left in a bunker. I'm trying to hit too tricky a shot. I catch the lip of the bunker. It rolls back down. I then hit too far and hit it in the water. You can see where this is going. He's got a stroke on the hole, right? He gets a pop on the hole. You know what our best score on the hole was?
Six.
With his pop?
I'm guessing
no,
six.
Was a seven.
Seven? Oh, my
seven.
Gosh.
We both made eight on this hole, and he had a pop, so we got to take his seven. That is how difficult this hole can be. So when you're thinking about winning this Big 12, you got four guys who've got to get through that hole without a train wreck.
That is not easy stuff.
I'll tell you that.
That is tough stuff.
I'm telling you, really tough. They haven't got it won. I don't care if they come to 18T, who's ever leading, they've got a five-shot lead. Do not call in the dogs and piss on any fires because the hunt is not over. I'm telling you, it could turn ugly.
Very good right there. Ty Gingrich of Cincinnati is in the lead individually, 8 under par. He shot 3 under today. He's gone 65, 74, 69, 208 through 54 holes. He has a two-shot lead over OSU's Preston Stout at 6 under par. Then you have Tommy Morrison and Gustav Vermont from TCU, and then tied for fifth place, you have Brian Stark, formerly of OSU, who transferred to Texas, and we just talked about his sister, Maya Stark, at the Chevron Championship. And then you have one of my favorite names of all time, T-Dub, Wolfgang Glawi, I think is how you say it, from Houston. Wolfgang is who you're paired with tomorrow. T-Dub, I am really excited to see how this shakes out. I know Texas has a big lead. OSU's been playing great golf. Looks like OU's gotten things figured out after a couple tough tournaments in Arizona and before that in Augusta. Ty Gingrich playing to try to get into regionals because I don't think Cincinnati's going to make it to regionals as a team, so he's got to be playing for individually to try to get into regionals. So what are your predictions on how you think tomorrow's going to go?
I'm just trying to wrap my head around being on the first tee of a golf tournament and introducing yourself saying, hi, I'm Wolfgang, pleasure to meet you. I can't wrap my head around that. It is just such a badass name there. I am in envy of that. I might have to go change my middle name or add a hyphen middle name, Wolfgang, in there. That would be pretty cool. One thing I got to say is you mentioned off those high finishes there for Ty Gingrich, who's leading the tournament, and he's from Cincinnati. So I scroll down. Where's Cincinnati at? They're in 11th place. His teammates absolutely suck. They got a 25th place finish, then 52nd, 55th, and then a 67. They had to flop in an alternate in there. And then the same for Gustav down there at TCU. He's in 3rd place for the whole tournament. The team's in DFL. I mean, how bad do your teammates have to be here? Can we get these two players a little bit of help?
Oh, that's good stuff. Woody, any predictions before you get out of here? I know you got to leave us here.
Well, I'll give you one prediction. There's a song that Kenny Chesney sung a long time ago, Don't Blink, because it'll go by. The reason I got to leave tonight is I've got to go to my 12-year-old grandson's birthday party, okay?
There you go.
I can't even tell you. It's hard to believe that I was dating his grandmother, my wife, when this little boy was born, and it seems like it was just yesterday. Don't blink. Well, the reason why I tell you that story, these guys playing tomorrow in that golf tournament, don't blink. You blink, you could make you an X, and you could cost your team the Big 12 championship. I would have hated to play there when I was in college, trying to come down that 18th hole, having to make 4 for my team to win. At that time, it was the Big 8 championship. Oh, my. I wouldn't want it. So, guys, there's going to be there's some fireworks tomorrow. Let's see what happens.
No doubt about it. OU's last Big 12 championship. They're in second, but they're 11 down to Texas. Also, Texas's last Big 12 championship, for that matter. The two teams headed to the SEC are first and second. OSU in third. We'll see how it shakes out. Last question, Woody. This is also OU and Texas's last conference championship that's going to be stroke play. When they head to the SEC, it'll be match play. Do you like match play championships or stroke play championships?
Yeah, I'm old school, dude. I still love that stroke play. I'm not a big match play guy. I'm sorry. That's the old guy in me. I mean, match play is a lot more exciting than stroke play, but I've always been that guy. You tee it up, you play, you post a number, and that's who wins.
I'm totally with you. T-Dub, any last thoughts on that?
I think that I tend to agree with y'all. I'd prefer to have the stroke play portion. I think that's the best way to determine who's the actual champion. How many times have we seen it since the NCAA's went to match play where the team that finishes number one doesn't win or finishes number one, the stroke play doesn't win the match play portion? Tends to happen. I actually think it's happened very seldom where the number one seed is won. So yes, I do wish there was a better way of doing it, but match play is interesting. In my opinion, there's not enough match play in golf, in especially major golf tournaments. I would love to watch on a more regular basis, but when it comes to actually determining who is the best team that deserving of winning the championship in the ring, it has to be stroke play.
I'm with you guys. I like the stroke play better too, but if you are going to make the national championship match play, it makes sense that the SEC does match play for their conference championship. Woody, thanks for joining us today. Tell your grandson happy birthday.
Yeah, we'll do it. I appreciate it. His name's Brooks King. He's a good boy. His daddy's kind of my adopted son. Well, he's my peach. I love him to death. So, no, I appreciate you guys. It's great hearing your voices again, even though I wasn't there last week. I was listening to you, and I enjoyed all your great shows from Augusta with your dad, Craig. That was so much fun to listen to. So, no, I don't need to be there for the one and done on this one coming up. I could care less. But I am pulling for old buddy DeGucci. I hope he pulls another one off in Adelaide. But other than that, I'm going to go celebrate my little grandson's birthday.
Very good. Jim Woodward, teaching professional out at Oak Tree National. T-Dub will stay with me after the break when we're going to talk Live Adelaide, one of the biggest parties in golf. We'll also talk about another team championship this week on the PGA Tour, the only team championship on the PGA Tour, coming up after the break here on Oklahoma's leader in golf, the 73rd hole.
We'd like to welcome in our newest sponsor for the 24 season, Allcom Security. They're located in Midwest City. It's an Oklahoma-based company by Oklahomans. If you have any alarm needs, whether it's home or business, or what they have now that I am fascinated by, and I think you would be too, they're OKC security trailers. These trailers aren't just your average surveillance units. They're equipped with cutting-edge technology that can distinguish between humans and vehicles. Imagine that. With precise accuracy, these trailers detect any unwanted activity on your property, whether it's a person wandering where they shouldn't be or a vehicle creeping around after hours. It's like having a vigilant guardian watching over your domain. I have personally seen these units, and they are amazing. So if you have any alarm needs, please call my good friends at Allcom Security, 405-732-9000, or just look them up on the web, Allcom Security.
And we are back here on the 73rd Hole Podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. Definitely go to golfoklahoma.org. Kim McLeod will definitely be doing a ton of great stories on the Big 12 championships. Also might be doing a story on Taylor Gooch, who is the defending champion this week at Live Adelaide. One of the biggest, I say one of, because it was comparable. I'm not trying to say anything controversial here, T-Dub, but it was definitely comparable to what we've seen from the Waste Management in the past. Now, not this year, not the Wasted Management of 2024, but the Australian fans were just starved for professional golf, and we saw that last year with thousands of people walking down the fairway with Taylor Gooch as he won the golf tournament last year in Adelaide. The fans are absolutely ready to party this week. They upped the attendance by 50% compared to last year, and there were a ton of people there last year. Remember Burt Kreischer whipping his shirt around after Chase Koepka made that hole-in-one on the party hole, the watering hole. I'm fired up to watch some of this. It'll be in prime time, which I'm excited about. I love tournaments in Australia. You can watch them at nighttime. Taylor Gooch, the defending champion, last year won by 3 shots over Anirban Lahiri. You also have Patrick Reed and Cam Smith up there on the leaderboard last year as well. Our man TG has played solid golf so far this year. I think he's maybe ready to pop and win for the first time in 2024 on LIV again. Who knows? Maybe back-to-back champions at LIV Adelaide.
That would be a cool thing to see, Sam, there for sure. And let's not forget, TG did win last year by 3 shots, but he had a 10-shot lead going into the final round. He shot 62-62. I can't think of many better ways to start a golf tournament than doing that. Just absolutely great stuff. And was able to, he had a little, some moments in that final round where it looked like he may give it up, but then he was able to secure some nice birdies coming down the stretch to secure that victory. And remember, that was his first victory on LIV. We looked back last year and talk about how he won 3 times, but that was the first one he had. Then he won the very next week in Singapore, and then won a few months later when it was at Valderrama in July. So that was really the start of when TG started to play really his best golf up to that point. It's kind of when it started. So hopefully he can rekindle a little bit of that magic that he had last year. You talked about how much attendance there was. So last year there were roughly 77,000 people that attended the tournament. For comparison, Waste Management predicted it was about 400,000. One thing to consider, though, is that Waste Management is doing it for one more day, so that'll include a little bit more into that when you have 25 or 33% more.
And
of
they've been
the,
doing it for about
attendance.
40 more years, right? As far as
it's Super Bowl week too. Like there's a whole lot of things that go into it. But as you alluded to earlier, how desperate Australia has been to see elite name golfers come down there, because it doesn't happen very often. Used to be, and a few good players still go down there in the winter months, which is summer down there and being in the Southern Hemisphere, to play the Australian Open, the Australian PGA, things like that. A lot of bigger names used to go down there. It used to be some of the biggest tournaments in the world were those events, and unfortunately, they're just not as popular as they are anymore. So Australia is fiending for some elite golf, as we saw last year with the crowds that they had, and I expect it to be even more so this year. I think it's going to be a raucous environment, which is exactly what LIV wants. PGA Tour is supposed to be the one that's all fancy, gentlemanly club thing like that. LIV wants to be the party thing. So they're going to, even in my opinion, improve on what they did last year. They'll have their watering hole, the party hole. Well, if someone makes a hole-in-one, there'll be beers going all over the place. So it's going to be extremely entertaining to watch. And as you mentioned, with it being in Australia, which is on the other side of the world, but it's right in the time zone where we'll be able to watch it in prime time late at night, as opposed to it being completely middle of the night as we see in some of the Middle Eastern tournament. So yes, I am very much looking forward to this one, Sam, and it's one of those things to where obviously with it being LIV, we have the same feels that we have every time, but we have a lot of players coming off their experience at the Masters, so it's going to be interesting to see how a lot of those players rebound from what was really, in all things considered, not a very successful major championship for the LIV players.
So your top 5 favorites this week are Joaquin Niemann, John Rahm, Bryson DeChambeau, Tyrrell Hatton, who had a decent week at the Masters, and then Taylor Gooch, the defending champion. Do you think that the champion this week comes out of those top 5?
Well, with the talent that's there, you think that, well, it's not going to be the worst bet in the world, but I think it'll be someone just outside of that. I think our man Cam Smith is finally starting to turn it around. I know that he had to withdraw from Miami, but the second in Hong Kong, 6th at the Masters, which was that the best finish for LIV, or did Bryson have better? Either way, it was up there for sure. So it's I think that he's trending in the right direction. And him and Bryson tied.
They
for
tied
six,
for six. Yeah.
They tied for six. So did one beat the other? No, they both tied. So that answers the question there. And he mentioned Bryson too. He had been playing great golf the last time they had LIV events. 7th, 6th, 4th, and 9th going in there. So he hasn't finished outside the top 10 since Mayakoba. Bryson obviously being the third favorite in there. So those are the two guys that I'm definitely looking at for sure. Obviously you have Niemann who at the start of the year, besides Scottie Scheffler, is playing probably the best golf out of anyone in the world in that top 5. John Rahm had a very underwhelming Masters, finishing 45th, but you see that on a very regular basis where the defending champion does not perform very well that next week. One thing I remember from TG playing last year, he didn't hit very many drivers, it seemed like. It looked like he was hitting a lot of fairway woods, some irons, it was pretty firm and fast last year, a lot of balls running out. It was very not necessarily link style, but it was definitely playing firm and fast where you needed to use the ground to your advantage. So I expect it to be not necessarily a bomb and gouge type environment. There's a little bit of imagination that needs to be involved, which what I think it does, I think that opens up the field a little bit more to some other guys. Then one thing that's interesting is you got to scroll pretty far down to find someone like the likes of Brooks Koepka, which he's down to like 15th odds. You have guys like Adrian Meronk and Sergio and Paul Casey are all ahead of him. Carlos Ortiz is favored ahead of Brooks. So that's someone who the analytics are very, very high on. But we know at any moment, if he wants to show up and play some good golf, he could win by 4 or 5 shots.
So, T-Dub, let's update the people on the LIV season-long standings. Joaquin Niemann won twice this year already. He has 105 points on the year. John Rahm is second at 73.4 points. John Rahm's finishes on LIV. He's gone third, eighth, fifth, eighth, and fourth. John Rahm at the Masters also finished tied for 45th. He barely made the cut at Augusta. Hasn't been playing great golf, not terrible golf. He's, you know, just obviously getting overshadowed by what not only Scottie Scheffler is doing on the PGA Tour, but also Joaquin Niemann winning twice on LIV so far this year. Some pretty outstanding golf. But Rahm has played solid golf, nothing terrible whatsoever. You got Dean Burmester in third of the season-long standings at 71 points. He won in Miami at Doral. Then you got Sergio Garcia, who finished second in Mexico at Mayakoba and also finished second in Miami. Abe Anser, he won in Hong Kong, and Dustin Johnson won in Las Vegas. You also have Bryson DeChambeau in seventh at 53 points. Bryson, as you mentioned, has played really solid golf so far this year on LIV. The defending champion, Taylor Gooch, he's gone 15th, 2nd, 6th, 21st, and tied for 9th. So a bunch of solid tournaments there, but I'm sure that TG is ready to get into contention during that final round. T-Dub, I did it last year. I feel sacrilegious if I don't do this again this year. I'm picking Taylor Gooch to win the golf tournament, and I'll live with the results.
Well, I hope the results are the same as you did last year, Sam, because not only did you pick him at Adelaide, but you decided to double up on him the next week in Singapore, and he decided to win again. So all things considered, I hope that is the case again for our man TG. So hopefully we can ride a little bit of momentum there. I said earlier I'm going to go ahead and ride with him. Give me Cam Smith. I think that it's going to exhilarate that Australian crowd to have the local Aussie hoist the trophy and take the $4 million check home. I think Cam Smith is going to do it this week, trending in the right direction with the exception of the withdrawal at Doral, looking like he's starting to get back maybe into that form that he had in 2022 when he not only won the British Open at St. Andrews, but he also won and he won the Players' Championship that year, and he also won in Kapalua earlier. Then he won LIV Chicago in his second LIV event. Looks like he's starting to trend, maybe not playing as great a golf as he was then, but at least getting close to what was some very, very good golf and probably one of the best stretches of putting performance that the game of golf has ever seen.
As far as the teams go, and we're going to get to team championship on the PGA Tour this week as well. They got partners at the Zurich Classic. But as far as the team season-long standings on LIV, the Crushers are in first place at 104 points. They won Jeddah and Hong Kong. In second place, Legion 13, which is, by the way, the Crushers are Bryson's team, along with Charles Howell and Anirban Lahiri and Paul Casey. Legion 13 with John Rahm and obviously Tyrrell Hatton. They won in Mayakoba in Mexico, and they also won the last tournament in Doral. They have 78 points, and Joaquin Niemann's team, even though they haven't won a tournament as a team, they have been extremely consistent, gone third, fifth, fourth, second, and fourth. They have 68 points, and then you have Team Smash, which is Brooks's team along with Taylor Gooch. They won in Las Vegas, and they also finished third in Jeddah, but have finished seventh in every other tournament as a team, which is obviously not great. So two really good tournaments, three really bad ones for Team Smash. So you never know what you're going to get with them. T-Dub, any thoughts on who might win LIV Adelaide as a team?
Well, some of them have been hit or miss, as you alluded to. Someone like Smash, who ends up winning Las Vegas, looks like they're going to get things rolling going into the height of golf season. And then they just kind of flattened out. The captain, Brooks Koepka, is going to have to play better golf than he has as of late. So look for him to maybe turn his game around at any point. It could happen. But maybe he's going through a little bit of a slump that could take some time. And TG, I feel like, is going to have a very solid week, so watch out for him. But it's a team game. So you're, especially in that final round where they're now counting all four scores, there's going to be a lot of volatility. You have to rely on, there's going to be all hands on deck if you want to get the team championship, which is why I like Team Torquay. I think that they have the best chance of hoisting it. Neiman has just been playing so extremely well as of late. I think that he's going to have a very, very solid finish. Of course, it definitely suits his game when it comes to being able to use the ground. He doesn't hit the ball extremely high, so he'll be able to hit some running shots. And then you got the talents of Beto Pereira, Carlos Ortiz, Sebastian Munoz on the team as well. So, yeah, give me Team Torquay. I think it's a course that suits them very well. And they haven't hoisted a trophy yet, but they've really been right in the mix in almost every tournament. I expect that to be the case this year. I expect the team competition this week to be pretty close. Maybe some team will go off and run away with it. But I think when we look back on it at the end of the week, I think we're going to have three or four teams that legit have a chance to win on the back nine.
One of the teams who has disappointed a little bit so far this year is Team Ripper, the Australian team. Cam Smith, Lucas Herbert, Matt Jones, and Mark Leishman. They're eighth in the season-long standings. They've gone fourth, ninth, third, and tenth. Cam Smith has played some, you know, really consistent golf, but the rest of the guys haven't necessarily contributed enough to where they're going to be up near the top of these team standings. And so I think maybe being at home, maybe they have a little bit better mojo. I'm going Team Ripper this week, T-Dub.
I think that's a solid pick there. Obviously, with me picking Cam Smith to win the tournament, you expect that the team would not be too far behind. You got to worry about the depth there. But being on the home soil, I think that they will have one of their highest finish so far this year is, what, third place? I expect them to have at least around that and not be where they have been for most of their tournaments. But you talk about teams that have let down. How about the four aces who are down in eighth place who the last couple of years seem to be absolutely unbeatable? Dustin Johnson, who knows what's going on in his game? He was 83rd place or something like that after the cut at the Masters. Didn't even sniff getting to play the weekend. And then Patrick Reed, he's shown a couple flashes of brilliance, but overall, especially the start of this year, he was absolutely horrible. And then Pat Perez going through the divorce, you have to question how much golf how much his mind is able to be on golf. And then Harold Varner III has had a pretty underwhelming start to the year as well. So we talk about teams like Ripper have underperformed. Four aces as well, Sam. They were the catalyst and really the dominant figure on this live, really since Live started. They finished second in Las Vegas where Dustin Johnson won. But since then, their best finish was seventh in Hong Kong. That's just unheard of from a team that has been really the catalyst of this team competition this last couple of years.
No doubt. Even the Range Goats, who lost the individual champion from last year, Taylor Gooch, are ahead of the four aces. Range Goats in sixth in the season-long standings with 40 points. They have a 15-point lead over the four aces who are in seventh. So it's time for the four aces, like you said, to start playing some better golf. T-Dub, any final thoughts on Live Adelaide? I'm just fired up to watch the party. I really am. They're adding some other cool aspects to the golf tournament, knowing that they're going to have a ton of fans out there. They're going to have this thing called the flight deck. It's like a double-decker driving range type deal where you can pay extra money to have a bar up in this thing, and the players will warm up on the flight deck. Three different featured players per day that you can, you know, be right up close and personal as these guys are hitting balls on the range. Three different featured players will be right in front of you as you're enjoying the bar up there at the flight deck.
Yeah, that's really cool there, Sam. That's just one of the things that are kind of innovative in that when it comes to being at the tournament golf viewership. So that's really cool to see. I'm interested to see, like you said, this how the party goes. Last year we had Chase Koepka, who's no longer on Live. He made a hole in one there on the watering hole. So then the party absolutely erupted. That was a shot they showed for numerous weeks going on forward, just how exciting that was. So hopefully we get to see another hole in one this year, maybe two or three of them to create a little bit of excitement. But yeah, I am interested to see how it all pans out. Do I think anyone will have a 10-shot lead after two rounds like our man TG did last year? I think that would be highly, highly unlikely, but I expect it to be a very exciting tournament.
No doubt about it. That scene of Taylor Gooch walking down the fairway at Live Adelaide was my favorite moment of the year last year in professional golf. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased with TG, but a lot of it had to do nothing with TG and a whole lot to do with the Australian fans, who obviously are great golf fans and have been starving for professional golf in their country and their continent for a long time and haven't gotten it, and Liv is bringing it back year in and year out to Australia. I got TG. I got the Rippers. T-Dub has Cam Smith. And what was your team champion again?
Team Torque.
Oh, yes. You're going with Joaquin Niemann's Team Torque. One more break here on the 73rd Hole podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk Zurich Classic to wrap up this week's 73rd Hole podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma.
Hey everyone, T-Dub here. I want to take a second to tell you about my good friends at McRae Roofing. Not too long ago, my roof was in desperate need of repair. There was extensive hail damage and I had many leaks that needed attention. Not only did Jeff and his staff build me a new roof, but they walked me through step-by-step of the claims process, which is something that I was very, very concerned about. Everything from the initial inspection of the roof to analyze all the damage to meeting with the insurance adjuster to make sure they were aware of every damaged area, making sure my claim was accurate. Their custom copper creations are truly beautiful and add a great touch to any roof. Not only do they do residential roofs, but they have an elite list of commercial customers, including Gallardia Country Club, Oak Tree National, and Bass Pro Shops. Check out their website at McRaeRoofing.com to view some of their work yourself and give them a call at 405-692-4000. That's 405-692-4000.
And we are back here on the 73rd Hole podcast, the official podcast of Golf Oklahoma. One more tournament to talk about before we let you guys go and enjoy the golf this weekend. We need to talk about the Zurich Classic. And yes, it is the team event on the PGA Tour. This week, they do have some really solid names playing in the Zurich Classic. You got Patrick Cantlay and Xander Schauffele. You got Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry. You also got Morikawa playing with Kirk Kitayama. You got Zalatoris playing with Sahith Theegala. Some local flavor, too. You got Austin Eckroat, former Cowboy, playing with former Sooner Chris Goddard. So a lot of interesting things going on the PGA Tour, the Zurich Classic down in New Orleans. T-Dub, what are your thoughts on this week? I think this is one of the cooler weeks you get to see on the PGA Tour. These guys coming off a couple really stressful weeks at a major championship and a signature event. I feel like this is a week they kind of get to unwind a little bit, but also show off their talents.
I agree, Sam. I've always liked the team portion of it. I wish it drew a few more bigger names toward, or maybe we just had another team concept like this that got a few bigger names, at least the two-player teams. I think it's a really cool concept because in this one, you kind of pick your partner that you're going to have for the entire or for the tournament. It's not necessarily – it's not like Liv where you're being bid on the entire season. It's just a one-week deal. You got guys like Schauffele and Cantlay have been friends for forever. They're going to go out and try to play this tournament together, who have had success in this tournament. They won it a couple of years ago, and they finished fourth last year, so you expect them to be up there again. One thing that is extremely pivotal in this tournament is that you get off to a good start. The first round of every tournament is the most influential analytically, but especially this week, it's even more so because of the format, because you'll have the first and third rounds, you play best ball, and the second and fourth rounds, you play alternate shots. Whenever you play alternate shot, it is very hard to make up a lot of ground. It's hard to rattle off 11 or 12 birdies in an alternate shot format. But in best ball, you go as low as you possibly can. And if you go out and some team goes out and shoots 12 or 13 under best ball, and your team's only able to shoot 6 or 7 under best ball, it's really hard to catch up from that point. You have to play extremely great golf. So really, Sam, I think this tournament, even more so than ever, is look at the teams that are inside the top 5, top 10, within a few shots of the lead after the first round. I think those are the teams you really have to look for, even more so in the past, just because two out of the last three rounds will be alternate shots.
No, you make a bunch of great points right there. I would say the favorite, I would agree with the analytics, that the analytics say that Cantlay and Schauffele have a 14% chance to win the golf tournament. That's extremely high. Like, you got Rory McIlroy and Shane Lowry, two Ryder Cuppers, obviously at 9% chance to win the golf tournament. So that's a 5% difference between the favorite and the second analytical favorite. Some other teams that are interesting, you got the Fitzpatrick brothers, Alex and Matthew Fitzpatrick, obviously. You also have Taylor Moore. He's playing with Matthew Neesmith. Am I not mistaken that they played well in this last year, didn't they, T-Dub? Taylor Moore and Matthew
Neesmith? They finished fourth. Yes, they were 26 under.
Very good, yeah. I mean, Taylor Moore and Matthew Neesmith, I would run it back, too, if I shot 26 under with my partner. You also have the Cootie brothers, Pearson and Parker Cootie, playing together in this one as well. I love this golf tournament. I love any time you get a partner. That's one thing you have in college golf. You have teammates. You get to root for other guys. And that's something you always have growing up, playing other sports, whether it's football, basketball, or baseball. You always have teammates and guys to root for that week. And golf can be such a lonely game that I like seeing these guys, you know, team up and have partners for a week. I know that it's not, you know, something that we want to see every single week. Otherwise, you would have a more of a format like LIV does, where it's more of a college format, where it's you drop in one score, you're counting three scores, or LIV is counting all four scores this year. But you know what I'm saying is you would have more of a stroke play format. I like watching these guys play best ball because that's what we go out to the golf course and play with our buddies. I like watching these guys play alternate shot. I want to see where Rory McIlroy puts Shane Lowry, and can Shane Lowry hit a great shot from where Rory McIlroy put him. You know, I love watching this. It's very entertaining to watch, and we only really get it. It's best ball alternate shot format at the Ryder Cup and the Zurich Classic, to be honest.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I think that up until the last couple of years of LIV, team golf is something that has been very, very limited when it comes to the professional game. And hopefully that's something that has obviously changed over the last couple of years. And I think that it will continue to change as we go forward. I think that golf fans are kind of clamoring for a team aspect like that. So, yeah, this is kind of the right now, this is the two-player version of that. And it is very fun. Here's another fun team, Sam. How about this? The eighth analytic favorite. It's a little bedlam team here. You got Austin Ekroat and Chris Goddard up teaming up. I think that'll be a very formidable team to watch out for. They're ahead of the likes of teams like the Højgaard brothers are playing in it. The Neesmith-Taylor Moore group, they're favored over them. Keith Mitchell, Joe Damon's probably going to be a pretty popular group out there. They're favored ahead of them. So look for the Oklahoma boys to play pretty well when it comes to that. But, Sam, this is a very top-heavy field, as you alluded to. The top four teams are 14% chance, 9%, and Morikawa, Kitayama, Thigala, Bulls, Alatoris are at 7.6%. The fifth analytic team is Maverick McNealy, Tom Hoagie at 2.8%. So there's almost a 5% drop-off between fourth and fifth. So even though the team concept allows it to be a little bit more open, there's a clear four teams that everyone's looking at to be up there at the leaderboard on Sunday.
T-Dub, as far as my one and done this week, this is the week where you get to use someone twice, because if you pick someone in the one and done, you also get their partner. And even if I already picked their partner, I get to use that team this week at the Zurich Classic. So given that fact, I am going with Chris Goddard this week. I think that Austin Ekroat and Chris Goddard are going to, I've seen these guys play best ball. I've seen these guys play, you know, money games out at Oaktree in the past. These guys will get in a comfort zone, feel like they're playing out at the men's course again, and get in a groove, and Austin Ekroat being able to hit his iron shots and his wedge shots from where Chris Goddard drives the golf ball, just strategically, I know they're good friends and play a lot out at Oaktree, but strategically, it's a really good team. I've seen it firsthand, T-Dub. Give me Chris Goddard as my one-and-done pick this week at the Zurich Classic.
It's a very formidable team, for sure. So, essentially, you're going to get to use Ekroat twice in the one-and-done. So,
that's
every
correct.
Single year when I approach this tournament, I think at the end of the year, if I miss out on the money by a few, like $3 or something ridiculous, I look back and I say, I used some player who wasn't that good twice in the one-and-done. I kick myself. So, you know, I was the type a few years ago when Koepka played in it, when Brooks played in it with his brother Chase, I picked Chase Koepka because I'm like, well, I get Brooks twice in a year. I'm going to go ahead and use that. So, for a couple reasons, I'm running out Shane Lowry in the one of them, because that means I get Rory twice in a year. Even though Rory has not been playing his best golf of the year, I think that he's a very solid player who I could live with taking twice in a season. And also, I think it'd be the most Rory thing of all time for him to be playing very, very mediocre almost all of this year, and then go out and win a team competition. It is literally, I could not dream up a more Rory scenario in my life. So I'm thinking that the Lowry McIlroy team will be hoisting the trophy on Sunday is what I prognosticate to happen.
Now, T-Dub, let me stop real quick. Let me stop you there because I thought about doing that with Shane Lowry and Rory McIlroy, but it worried me a little bit. Does it worry you even just a little bit that Rory is now going to play 4 weeks in a row? Do you think he's going to be tired at all?
Normally, I would say yes, but kind of like you were talking about earlier, where it's a team competition, it's more laid back. And so, no, I don't think it'll tire him as much. The thing that worries me most is that Shane Lowry, the last two tournaments, has putted absolutely horrible. He's lost more than a shot and a half at the Masters and the Heritage on the greens. But he's hitting the ball exceptionally well. His last five tournaments, he's gained more than a shot with the irons. And those two guys are really good friends. I think it's going to lighten them up. So I think both of them are going to play more loose golf. And so I think that'll lead to some bigger success. But as I mentioned, the first round is extremely important. If they go out there in that best ball and aren't able to make any putts and only shoot a four or five under, then they're not going to have any chance to win the tournament. So they better get off to a good start for my prediction to be correct. And one thing I got to mention about the one and done. Last year, I saw one of the most ridiculous things I've ever occurred in any type of sports gambling in my life. There was two people last year in our one and done pool who ran out Matthew Fitzpatrick as their pick. Why would you not pick Alex Fitzpatrick? You could save Matty Fitz for another tournament. What are you going to do, save Alex Fitzpatrick for whatever bullshit tournament he gets to play in? Don't be an idiot. If you're going to pick the Fitzpatrick team, make sure you scroll down to the bottom and pick Alex. Do not run out a top 15 player when you can pick his brother who has barely played any professional golf.
That is exactly right. You tell him, T-Dub. As far as some of my best bets for the week, obviously, if I'm going with Chris Goddrup and Austin Eckroat, you're going to be able to get some value on those guys as far as odds in Vegas. Now, analytically on Datagolf loves them, and you can get them at plus 6,500. So that's my best bet of the week. If I didn't bet on that team, another team that I absolutely love is Will Zalatoris and Sahith Theegala. I think both those guys have been playing really solid golf recently. That is just a team that I feel like makes sense as far as ball striking. Sahith Theegala, solid putter. It just makes sense to me, T-Dub. Any other teams that you might like, and I can tell you their odds?
Well, that team does make sense for sure. I was really hoping to pick my man T. Moore and Matthew Neesmith because T. Moore's been playing so well to start this year. But Neesmith, his 2024 has been absolutely atrocious. Besides his 26th finish at the Players' Championship, his best finish was actually last week at 43rd at Punta Cana, which was an opposite field event. 2024 has not been very kind to old Matthew. So I'm going to go ahead and steer away from that team.
You can get them at plus 6,500 as well.
Yeah, I would definitely much prefer to have the Eckroat-Goddrup group than that team. A team who I'm going to look at, who I think has a decent chance, even though he burned me last week because we did have to pick a one-and-done in Punta Cana, and I selected old Nikolai, but I think the Højgaard brothers will play extremely well this week. Rasmus, who we really didn't talk about a whole lot because it happened earlier in the season over in Europe, was playing some of the best golf that really the DP World Tour had seen in a little bit. He didn't win, but he had finished 6th, 8th, 2nd, 11th, 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 6th, and 16th in a three-month stretch. He had been playing absolutely stellar golf, but since then has not played extremely well. He had a withdrawal in his last tournament at the Indian Open, and his best finish in his last three events was 29th in Singapore. So whatever form he had earlier in the year, it's kind of fizzled out. But two extremely talented brothers. We saw how talented Nikolai was when he had the solo lead at a point on Saturday afternoon after he made a long birdie on the 10th hole and then proceeded to completely shit the bed and finish 16th in the tournament. I saw a finish for your first time at Augusta, but yet when you have the lead with 26 holes to go, you do not want to finish outside of the top 15. But two twin brothers teaming it up, Sam, I think that would be a decent dark horse to potentially get you a kind of under the cover win.
Good stuff there. The Zurich Classic going on in New Orleans this weekend. Hey, before we get out of here, I forgot to mention one thing, and I have to mention this before we leave. The Corrales Punta Cana Championship, the opposite field event last week to the signature event at the RBC Heritage. Kevin Tway finishes solo third at 19 under par. Billy Horschel ended up winning the golf tournament by 2 over Wesley Bryan, but Kevin Tway playing some good golf again. That's great to see. You know, Kevin dealt with some injuries and, you know, some stomach problems as well in the past year or so. You know, he didn't qualify at PGA Tour Q School. He's been kind of playing back and forth between opposite field events on the PGA Tour and web.com events. But for him to go out there and shoot 19 under and finish solo third place, that is great for former OSU Cowboy Kevin Tway.
Oh, 100% it is for sure. Yeah, with all the injuries and stuff he dealt with, he has not been playing very good golf at all as of late. He finished 23rd back at the RSM in November. But since then, he had missed it. He played in Dubai. He missed the cut over there. His highest finish on the Corn Ferry was 37th at the start of April in the Club Car Championship. He did finish 32nd at the other opposite field event in Puerto Rico. But yet, someone of Kevin Tway's talent, you expect to do a little bit better. He's a 206th player in the data golf rankings, so he is moving a little bit up from where he was with his third place finish. So hopefully that happens. And I tell you what, Sam, you have the likes of Kevin Tway, Wesley Bryan, Charlie Hoffman, all fairly likable guys out there with a chance to win, and you have freaking Billy Horschel win the tournament. Go out and shoot 9 under.
I was rooting
Give me
so hard against Billy Horschel. Oh my gosh. I mean, he's talking about this and that. I'm not even going to get into what he was talking about after the golf tournament, but Billy Horschel's got to be the least likable guy on the entire PGA Tour. And he beat, like you said, a bunch of likable guys. It just proves sometimes the golf gods just don't care.
No, I don't. And he had to go out and do it by shooting a 63. In the final round. Like, of all ways, could he at least had a lead on Saturday to at least prepare us for this, kind of tip this with it, but don't have all the guys that we want to have a chance to win out there win. And then Billy Horschel come out of nowhere with a 63. He had gone 67, 69, 66, 63. So very, very good golf from Billy Horschel. But yeah, come on, man. Like, no one wanted to see that.
What did he tell Taylor before that tournament? Why'd you even show up? No one wants you here. That's kind of how I felt about Billy Horschel at the Corrales Punta Cana Championship, D-Dub. Any final thoughts before we get out of here today and let people go enjoy the golf this weekend?
Well, there is a lot of golf happening. We talked about earlier in the show how much of a legendary run we're seeing, not just in the men's game, but the women's game as well. So I want people, especially the true golf fans like we know a lot of our listeners are, make sure you embrace the great golf that is being played. Is it extremely fun to watch Scottie Scheffler go out and win every tournament by 4 or 5 shots? No, it doesn't make for the most entertaining Sunday afternoon, or in this case, Monday morning with the RBC. But yet, this is something that we have not seen this great of golf since Tiger. And in the last 30 years since analytics have came out, there's been no one that has played better than Scottie Scheffler has, with the exception of Tiger. So make sure that you embrace it. And then when you get a chance, a lot of people don't necessarily get embraced in the women's golf. Make sure that you watch Nelly Korda when she plays, because not only does she have probably the best swing, and not just women's golf, but all of golf, but the run that she's on is comparable to what Annika was. And I tell you what, Sam, I remember being a 10, 11-year-old kid and being amazed with how great Annika was. So I know that's happening to young boys and girls around right now with Nelly. So I think it is really great for the game of golf. And hopefully, as we were talking about earlier, maybe someone could come up and start to battle these and we can have some really intense rivalries in this great game.
No doubt about it. I cannot wait for the next 3 majors of the year. We got Valhalla coming up next. Rory, where he won last, you know, literally 10 years ago. I'm fired up for this summer of professional golf. Like you said, just enjoy the dominance while it lasts, because it will eventually go away. That's just how professional golf works, or golf in general works. T-Dub, great stuff today. Thanks again.
Oh, Sam.
Yeah.
Sam, one more thing we got to point out that I really hadn't looked that much into, but I remember hearing about it and talking about a 15-year-old Miles Russell
made the cut
in a Corn Ferry event.
We definitely need to talk about this. Go ahead. I mean, this is not only made the cut, but, I mean, he was up near third place on the final day, right?
See, he was up there for sure, yeah, and he was – I'm trying to figure out exactly – where he finished right now, but yeah, I remember seeing it as the headline and saying 15-year-old made the cut. I'm like, what in the world is going on here? And this kid is an absolute superstar. He's number one in essentially all of the junior rankings that you need to find. He's from Florida. He's in the 2027 graduating class. He finished 20th at this Corn Ferry event. So you got to expect this guy to get some more finishes and some bigger events, because 15 years old, that kind of talent, that's something that we're talking about runs like Scottie Scheffler has. And Scottie Scheffler, we know, was a great junior player. he wasn't finishing top 20 in Korn Ferry Miss at 15 years old.
No, he definitely wasn't. I mean, I've never heard of anything like this happening, and I watched an interview of this kid as well, and he was just way beyond his years as far as maturity and everything. One thing that I thought was funny is he was talking like, you know, you hear PGA Tour players talking their post-round interviews, and then he slips in the fact that, yeah, this was the first round I've ever used a yardage book. And he realized how young this kid actually is.
It is unbelievable. He's number one in the Rolex AJGA rankings, which is encompasses all of junior golf. And he's only a freshman, Sam. To be number one in that ranking, to be that young, you never see that happen. That's stuff like Jordan Spieth was doing. He's one of the best junior players we ever seen. So this is a kid, Miles Russell, his name, from Jacksonville Beach, Florida. All you golf fans out there, be watching. This kid is going to be making a name for himself probably sooner rather than later.
Great stuff today, T-Dub. Like I said, thanks to Woody. Thank you, T-Dub. We will be back on Thursday at 7 p.m. for the 73rd Hole Radio Show. If you live here in Oklahoma City on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Normally on Wednesdays at 7 p.m., but guess what? The Thunder are in the playoffs, and the Thunder play on Wednesday. Definitely Thunder up out there and wear your dang T-shirts, everybody. Everybody enjoy the golf this weekend. Zurich Classic, Live Adelaide, and you have the Big 12 Championships going on tomorrow as well. If you're a golf fan or a basketball fan, this is one of the better weeks of the year. Everyone, enjoy the golf this weekend. This has been Sam Humphries on Oklahoma's Leader in Golf, the 73rd Hole Podcast.